51551 is our text number. I must warn you that the opening conversations today are on the foot of the call we got on Monday about the release, day release of David Curran, who was convicted just over 9 years ago of the double murder of two Polish men in Crumlin and Dublin, Marius and Pavel. And you've probably heard during the week we were contacted then by Marius's family, who all went back to Poland after that horrific tragedy. And Gosia, who's Marius's sister, told us how the family were deeply, deeply upset to learn that this man had been allowed out, if only temporarily. The government or the Department of Justice didn't tell them, they weren't aware of it. The father and mother are still deeply traumatised by what happened to their 28-year-old son, whose birthday would have been around the same time as his murderer was released. And the man also murdered Pavel Skrzydlowski at the same time. Anyway, this has prompted a number of calls, including one from Michal. And as I say, Michal, I'm so sorry that the murder of your daughter should prompt me to say to other people, please be careful about young ears listening to this, such as the stress of what happened, Kira. What happened there, Michal?
Well, Joe, the reason we got in contact with you, we're just traumatised ourselves by a decision was made during the week to release Gordon Molloy, okay, who murdered our Kira on the 12th of November 2007. We're just traumatised. We're just absolutely heartbroken. Mm-hmm. We miss our beautiful daughter so much. So we decided to ring in, and I'm speaking to you on behalf of my very strong wife, our brilliant grandson, our extended families, and all Kira's friends. We grieve and we pain on a daily basis, and we're heartbroken.
Yeah.
You know, she was taken, robbed from us by an evil convicted killer, Gordon Molloy from Ballochmyler in County Leash. The news we received yesterday from the IPS that
the Irish Prison Service,
that Gordon Molloy was to have a family day out in June. It just sickens us and it hurts us so much. We're devastated. This is not the first time this has happened. Gordon Molloy has not even served 10 years of a convicted murder sentence.
Yeah.
He received a life sentence. Last July, I'd say it was the 4th of July, around that week, on a Friday, Joe, around 5 o'clock, late on a Friday afternoon, received word from the IPS that Gordon Molloy was released on that Sunday.
Okay.
We were told the decision was made by someone in the IPS and that we could protest against it, but really we couldn't change it. And we were caught on the hop last year because it was a Friday. It was actually, I think it might have been a long weekend, I can't remember, but there wasn't time to mobilise to take action.
Okay.
This time we want to take action. We want to mobilise. We can't believe, you know, this is an insult to Kira's memory. It's an insult to the victims' families, not just our family, but all families who have gone through this. So it's you know, we're absolutely furious with the decision to release this monster in society. And I'll go through why exactly, if I may, Joe. This was no ordinary murder. This is one of the most horrendous, maybe, murders that took part on the island of Ireland ever, probably. Gordon Molloy was in a relationship with our Kira, our only child.
Yeah.
And this started around the end of 2005, maybe 2006. And after a while, Gordon Molloy moved in to Kira's house with our grandson, Jamie.
Yeah.
And things seemed okay for a while, but After a while, we noticed things were going bad. Like he was verbally abusing her, he was physically abusing her, he was verbally abusing Jamie. He was aggressive. He was stalking her. He was following her everywhere we go. He was just completely jealous of any relationship she had with, whether it was us or with our friends in college. So Kira ended the relationship And after that, things got worse. He stalked her. He sat outside the house in his car, drinking tins of beer till all hours, and even slept in the car outside the house. He would turn up at school when Ciara was collecting Jamie. He just basically made her life a misery. He would follow her out when she was socialising with her friends from college. He threatened her in public, and he threatened two of Ciara's great friends, Tara and Adele. They took the stand to testify that he actually, in public, threatened that he would kill anyone who, if he would kill Ciara if she ever got another boyfriend. You know, so this was going on for ages. Ciara had finished the relationship.
And Ciara was Ciara was 22 years old.
Ciara is just 22, you know, she just turned 22 when she was murdered. And she had made a lovely life for herself. She was going back in college. She had a part-time job. Jamie had just started junior infants. Everything was going great, except this monster just wouldn't get out of the background. And on the 12th of November 2007, the night previous, Jamie had been staying with us, and I left home here to go into Carlow Towns to meet Ciara at 8 o'clock in the morning so I could come back home to go to work. And Ciara wasn't in the house. But I didn't realise that. I pulled up. Ciara promised me she'd be up at 8. So I knocked the door, and I knocked the door three times, Joe. And I mean, three thunders raps, because I was in a rush to back to work. And that's just a natural thing to do. You just don't want to be, you don't want to be late. And I was parked parallel to the door, because the door was very close to the street. I could actually just jump out of the car. And then I jumped back into the car and I rang Ciara, and she answered me, and she said she was in a taxi round the corner.
Okay.
And she'd only be a minute. And I just grand. So I got Jamie ready, and Ciara came around the corner, and I hugged her, and I said, listen, I have time, I'll ring you later on. And she says, okay, Dad. And that was the last time I spoke to Ciara. All the time, Gordon Malloy had broken into her house during the night, and he had been hiding behind the door with a machete, waiting for Ciara to enter the house. Ciara entered the house with her grandson Jamie in her arms. No matter how good you are at any kind of self-defense, if you're holding something in your arms and someone attacks you, you know, you have no chance.
And Jamie was four at the time, or so.
Jamie was four. His fifth birthday was 2 to 3 weeks following the murder. And Ciara actually said to Jamie, run, Jamie, run. And Jamie ran up the stairs, and Malloy murdered Ciara. Now, as I say, the reason I want to tell you the whole story, this was not an ordinary murder. He stabbed Ciara 28 times, Joe.
God.
28 times, listeners. Then he removed her clothing and attempted to have sexual intercourse with her.
God almighty.
He then took her body up to the bath and to clean off any evidence there might have been of the sexual attack. And that's why I'm saying, and our families are saying, this decision by the IPS to release this monster into society is unreal. So to go back to yesterday, we got the word from the IPS, and my wife, Patty, rang to the liaison officer we have, and the liaison officer told us that things were different from this time last year, and that the Minister for Justice, Charlie Flanagan, and I hope he's listening to me today, Charlie Flanagan has appointed a commissioner who makes these decisions on day releases. So when we asked who the commissioner was, our liaison officer in the IPS said that she was in a position to tell us, or maybe she didn't know. So that's the position we're in now. I just hope that the person who made this decision, you know, this commissioner, goes back and reads the story. It's all over the internet. Google it. See what a monster Gordon Malloy is. What an evil animal he is, and how could you release this person into society?
And there's one other element, Micheál, if you don't mind me prompting you on it, because it is evidence that this man, when he committed that heinous murder of your daughter, and then proceeded to, in his next vile act, that he then proceeded for people who think he might have been out of his mind and banging his head off the wall, he then proceeded to leave a message. Isn't that correct? Did he write a message?
He wrote a message with blood on the wall.
And the message, but the message was legible. That's what I mean. It was readable.
Yes. So
this,
I can't remember the exact words at this time. I think it was something about love you or something. I forget. To be honest, Joe.
Don't worry. It's just that third act.
Oh, he knew this was premeditated. He had threatened Ciara in public. He had threatened Ciara in her own house. It was premeditated. He had got a copy of the key of the house, or he had broke it in. It was one day. Myself and Ciara come back from our house, and Ciara's, the top window of Ciara's, the bathroom was open, and the bathroom was actually above a little hall, and I said to Ciara, why is your window open? And she says that I don't know, and I thought it was very strange, because, you know, I don't remember leaving it open. So later on, that could have been that night, or could have been later on in the week, she relayed to me that Gordon Malloy had been in the house that day, and he had used the little roof of the outside hall to get in through the bathroom window. So we think that's the day he might have stolen a copy of the key, because as Ciara's friends witnessed in the court, they witnessed Ciara taking the key back off him in public, and they testified to that. So part of his story was that he was still living there, that he hadn't broken into the house, and, you know, that it wasn't premeditated and that he was insane at the time. But as you rightly pointed out, and I never really thought of this before, you know, if you're temporarily out of your mind, how can you write so legible? Yeah, that's a great point, so, you know. So,
And did you know, at the moment you got that horrific news about your only child being murdered, did you know it was him?
Yeah.
Did you? You did, did you?
Yeah. I got back to the house that day around 3:30 back from work, and it was two strangers in the yard, and the car was across the yard, Joe. And I said, God, there's someone breaking into the house. So I parked parallel to the car, so they couldn't get out. Mm-hmm. And then I noticed one of them was looking over the fence. I said, sorry, what? And he says to me, we're Detective Frank Stevenson, and I can't remember the other detective's name, and showed me his ID. And I turned around, and Frank Stevenson was handing this. I says, our Ciara's dead, and Gordon Malloy killed her.
Oh my God.
And
oh
he says,
God.
Yeah. He said, yeah. You know, I just knew when I saw him. But we had tried to make, myself and my wife Patty, I tried to make contact with Ciara several times that morning. And we couldn't, because obviously we didn't know. But at one time the phone was engaged, and my wife got through. Gavin was engaged, and we later found out that Gordon Malloy had used her phone to phone the ambulance. Now he actually used her phone to phone the ambulance. You know.
And did he immediately give himself up? Did he immediately admit that he murdered?
Oh, well, you see, he did, which is a very familiar storyline in these kind of homicides. He did. He harmed himself to look as if there could have been a struggle. You know, like, you know, if you read that, and any of these homicide stories, like that, well, they're not stories, obviously, but these people try to harm themselves so it looks as if there was a struggle. There was no struggle that day. Gordon Malloy hid behind the door with a machete. He harmed himself and had to be taken to hospital. He was arrested straight away and charged with Ciara's murder two or three days later.
And there was an incident where you saw him again in the town, a year later.
It wouldn't even have been a year later, Joe, but it could have been 5 to 6 months. Now, at this stage, I'd like to tell the listeners that Gordon Malloy was out on bail for a GBH charge, which he was found guilty of.
Grievous bodily harm.
When he murdered Ciara. He had been found guilty. He had attacked a person on a street in Carlow with a sock full of golf balls. And he was found guilty of that, and he was released on bail pending whatever it was. And then the judge was going to give him a sentence. So he was actually guilty of a charge when he was out. Yeah. When he murdered Ciara. So a couple of months later, it could have been April 2008, it wasn't too far. I had to go into Carlow Courthouse to do some legal business, and I was walking up Court House steps, a nervous boy in my life standing, staring at me. I couldn't believe it. I went berserk and I had to be restrained for the guards because I just blew the top. He was just standing there in handcuffs. Mm-hmm. He had been back in front of the court for the previous charge, which he should have been in prison for, and then Ciara would have been alive.
And
so at that point, Joe, okay. My wife, Paddy, the IPS guaranteed that any time Gordon Molloy would be released, that we would know. Yeah. So that's why they have done that any time he has been for a hospital visitor, that we have been told that he's been out. So that's why we got the email yesterday,
okay,
saying that he would be out for this family day out. Now, you know, he's destroyed our family. Our family day out is to the graveyard in Mysore. He gets a day out with his family after what he did. He destroys a family. He deprives a four-year-old of his mother. He deprives us of our wee girl for the rest of our lives. And he gets his right to go on a day out to Port Arlington to meet his family. Now, the email did say he will be escorted by guards at all occasions, prison officers, I mean. It doesn't say whether he will be handcuffed when he is in this building. So apparently there's some sort of a building in Port Arlington where these prisoners are taken on day release. It's like a family home where they get to be with their family for the day. You know?
His family, that I presume are visiting him anyway in prison. So this is a bonus. Yeah. This is a significant bonus. You're allowed out for the day. Yeah. And remember, David Curran, who sparked this discussion on Monday when Alan Kelly was talking to us. David Curran, when he was released, he's by the way, Pavel and Marius were murdered 3 months after your Ciara. Right. He got out last Sunday week, and he was brought to a place in Clondalkin. He was not handcuffed. The photographs in the Sunday World were not of him handcuffed, as Alan Kelly said. They were of him hugging people and walking around and going into this place. And he looked like he didn't have a care in the world. And he looked a lot better than bulked up or whatever since he first went into prison. But it's around the same time frame. And if people heard Alan Kelly on Monday, who was a friend of the two Polish men, because their families fled back to Poland afterwards. They were so traumatized. Mm. He was deeply upset by the release of this man. And he's not even, as he said, I'm not even a blood relative of the two boys who worked for me. So I don't think we can even get, and you've been extraordinarily moving in your testimony here today, but I still don't think, Michal, anyone outside of what you and your wife and your Ciara's friends and Jamie, young Jamie, have been through, would ever get a glimpse of the horror that's been visited on you. Now, did they say, we will ensure he will never ever come back near where you live or any of those
boys? No, that has never, it's never been talked about. All we know is, when he was convicted of life imprisonment, we thought, oh, that's another milestone in prison for life. But it doesn't mean that in Ireland. If I murdered someone today, just an ordinary Joe Soap, after 7 years I can go for parole, Joe. Mm-hmm. After 7 years, it's ridiculous. Now, if I murdered a guard or a TD or something, I wouldn't get any sort of remission or an appeal to the parole board before 20 or 25 years, I think it is, actually. You know, what's the difference between our daughter's life and everybody else's life and the PDs and the guards? And I'm not just picking on that. It's an insult to Ciara's memory and to all the victims and their families that after 7 years, someone who has found of stabbing someone 28 times, Joe, 28. That day after 7 years. Now, he's already been up once before the parole board and it was rejected. And he's actually up again now in June for his second appeal to the parole board. So we had to make our own submissions. Like we have to make submissions to the parole board why he should be kept in, why he should fill out his sentence, the sentence he received. He received the life sentence, you know. And we've had to do that twice already. Hopefully now, in June or whatever he's up again, it'll be refused again. But imagine he hasn't even done 10 years of a life.
But he has been granted that release in 2 weeks, has he not?
Yes, but that's okay. why we're on today. And I personally asked Charlie Flanagan to reverse the decision of the commissioner, whoever the commissioner is. I would like to ask your listeners to email Charlie Flanagan's office. He's the Minister for Justice, Joe. We want justice and we want equality. That's what we want. This killer should not be on the street, but it's for an hour or a day, or he should never actually be released again. That's the way we feel. And if the Minister for Justice can't reverse this decision, they're suffering wrong. Has the Commissioner read the file? Just because he's good inside, it doesn't mean you get the day out, Joe. Sorry, well, if you're in prison, you have to follow the prison regime. There's no second choice. Of course he's going to behave.
There are rewards within the prison for good behaviour as well. As there are penalties for as you say, one of them is being released. Now, stay there with us, Micheál, for a sec, please. 51551, because Michael Kelly. Michael, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joy.
Now, unfortunately, there are similarities in your story as well, in that the man who killed your partner, murdered your partner, was on remand as well, was he not? He was out, he was on remand for another offence, and in fact your partner, who was his mother, begged the court to take him into custody. Now, where is he now, Michael, and what's happened?
You rang me today because of the paper article that on today, and he was moved from Wheatfield to a special unit in Portlaoise, I think. That's where he's at the moment.
And he's been involved in attacking more people?
Apparently so, last night, yeah.
Now, your partner, who was killed by Noreen, who was killed by Caelan Eden, her son, she had pleaded for help before, had she not?
I had witnessed her 3 weeks before, being in the court of law. Her son had... He hadn't turned up for a court case. And his mother stood up and said that her son was sick and needed help. And the judge had said she had no choice but to send him to prison for 10 days for breaking the law, not turning up in court, but take the mother's plea into consideration and ordered psychiatric evaluation to run with the sentence. Yeah. That remand warrant got lost, conveniently. And there was a GSOC investigation into it, and I've mentioned to you before, Joe, that there was recommendations made that the prison service, that the Gardaí and the court services be formalised. As far as I'm concerned, they were already formalised. They lost, in other words, working off the same page, they lost the remand warrant. So, in effect, she would possibly be alive if he had been psychiatric evaluated, because he had been also not on the pull system for an assault, that he had been assaulted when he was 12, which is when the damage was done to him. He was assaulted by two men, falsely accused him of damaging their property. He won the court case but never got psychiatric help. And my condolences go out to Michael on the other end there. Very, very sad story, and there's not enough support, as he will tell you, in the system for the likes of survivors of situations like this in our country. And the biggest lack of respect, I think, that the system has in relation to this horrific stories is that there is no independent body gathering the information of what Micheál's saying at the other end, and myself and other people, Mrs. Chadha, her case, as she said, was her son had been treated guilty, so therefore there's no account for how and why.
It was her husband who killed the two children.
But the point being that how to prevent something like this happening again, you know. That's the biggest problem in our country. There's no accountability. In Noreen's case, it took 8 years to have not her autopsy, but her, what do you call it?
Her inquest.
Only happened last August. She died in 2011. So everything was put in a long figure, conveniently. It doesn't surprise me that Kellen, in a way, and my heart goes out to the families that are involved. Again, these prison officers, two of them were hospitalised last night, I believe.
Yeah, and a teacher, yeah.
And a teacher.
In Midlands.
Deep the sympathies to the family for whatever they're going through. But Kellen doesn't have many visitors. He should have. He got murdered, but in my mind, it always should have been diminished responsibility. At his trial, they couldn't say whether he had been brain damaged or not prior to killing his mother, and yet afterwards it was diagnosed conveniently.
Who does go to see? Because he was moved to this new unit, which apparently is for people who are prone. It's a National Violence Reduction Unit. And obviously that in itself gives you a clue as to who's being sent there. But does he have any visitors? Does he have any remorse? Does he have any...
The last visitor that I'm aware of is his cousin. I haven't been to that new unit myself. I have visited him when he was in Wheatfield. Remorse, he's institutionalised at this stage, show, so he would be oblivious to life as you and I are talking about it, being stuck in. He was very young when this happened. He was out of his mind. He, unlike the man that killed Michal, this young fellow was traumatised, hadn't slept in 5 days, and was on a concoction of all sorts of drugs. Major cry for help, but misread. She rang the guards. She rang the HSE, she rang her brother, she rang her best friend. If that's not a cry for help, she did all that on the day. The guards told her to bring her in, and they had lost a remand warrant, a second one, from 2 days earlier where he hadn't turned up for another court case. So even when you cry for help, you're not going to necessarily get the help.
And... Michael, have you got any help or Noreen's other family since this horrific crime was committed?
I was very fortunate after she died to... the very first thing I did was I got a letter from the HSE, and I went with our daughter, she was 7 or 8 at the time, and we went into a building, and the first thing I was asked was to separate from my child. And which I did under duress, but I just felt there was something wrong here. When I came out, my daughter turned, "Dad, I don't want to come back here." She was 7.
Okay.
So I was fortunate from then on to know a very, very good counsellor. And from that, I was able to keep my feet on the ground. I've talked to retired Gardaí. I've talked to retired criminal lawyers. I've gone to all sorts of scenarios, all sorts of meetings. And I've talked to counsellors who have worked with the prison service, who tell me it's the worst in between England, Ireland, Scotland, Wales, and our mental health system.
Michael Kelly, please stay with us. Micheál Cunningham, please stay with us. Micheál is talking about his only child, Ciara, 22 years of age, murdered by her ex-boyfriend, so to speak. That's how he knew her and got into the house, Gordon Molloy. And by the way, Micheál, I'll raise these other points with you after the break. And Michael Kelly, whose partner, Noreen, was murdered by her son. 51551joe@rte.ie.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.